35. The floor of the sub-basement thunked into the bottom of T-Cake's boot. Didn't see that last step coming this time either. He stepped off the ladder and wedged himself back against the wall of the tube as far as he could get, but it wasn't far enough to clear any room for Naomi to join him. "Hang on," he said into his helmet. Naomi winced at the screech and crackle in her ear and couldn't make out the words, but she caught the meaning. She stopped and turned, looking down. She could see T-Cake at the bottom, but the half-barrel-shaped pack was so big he could barely turn around, much less move enough to make room for her. Opening the pack and activating the device in that tiny space was out of the question. "You're gonna have to open the door," she shouted into her microphone. An enraged, inarticulate screech came back from T-Cake, but she understood perfectly well what it meant. Under no circumstances would he open that door. She proceeded on that assumption and replied, "There's no room to take that thing off." T-Cake looked up at her through the thickly clouded face mask. You could see the white blur of her suit and her arm extended, pointing toward the heavy metal door. He turned, tried shaking his head in the hope that some beads of sweat would fly off his face, hit the mask, and streak paths through the condensation. It worked. Sort of, and a tiny ribbon was wiped clear, just enough for him to get a sense of where the large handle was that would release the door mechanism. He reached out and gripped it. If he hadn't been wearing the hazmat gloves, T-Cake would have felt the heat immediately, and there's no way in hell he would have opened the door, but through the thick plastic layer, he couldn't tell there was any difference. On the other side of the door, the situation had changed radically in the past 10 minutes. The trail of fungus that had been creeping across the floor from the depleted mass of the Rat King had reached the small puddle of water on the floor beneath one of the sweaty cooling pipes. Throughout its entire history as a species, Cordyceps novus, in all its mutated forms, had never run across pure H2O. From its birth inside a sealed oxygen tank, through its brief childhood in the arid Australian outback, and even in its recent experiences inside the bloodstream of human bodies, water had been a rare and heavily diluted substance. Even in abundance inside a mammal, it was corrupted by other elements, its essential power limited. The moment the fungus broke the surface tension of the water molecules at the edge of the puddle, it had undergone a profound and spectacular blossoming. It bloomed into the puddle like a time-lapse film of a flower in springtime. It shot up the rivulet that had run down the wall within a matter of seconds, and it attacked the outside of the sweaty overhead pipe with fervor. It grew along the length of the pipe in both directions, sprouting and dripping onto the floor in great gobs of living organism. Everywhere it contacted the pipe, it set to work with great industry, deploying copious amounts of benzene X, now a steel-eating acidic substance, determined to chew through the pipe and free the flowing waters within. Once it broke through, it would open the way for the fungus to spread like wildfire through the pipe, into the groundwater, and then the Missouri River beyond. As the chemical reactions raged, the temperature in the hallway had risen. It topped 80 degrees when T-Cake turned the handle on the door. The interlocking metal bolts slid out of their guide tracks and the door swung inward. "Holy Jesus Christ," he said, looking into the hothouse, now dense with active, visible growth. Aerosolized bits and spores hung and swirled heavily in the air all around him. Through Naomi's headset, all she heard of his voice was a tooth-grinding shriek. But she saw what he saw and had no interest in pausing to admire it. She spun T-Cake around, shouting into her microphone, "Unbuckle the front straps!" He set to work with fumbling hands to undo the leather straps and get the T-41 off his back so they could activate it and get the hell out of there. The buckles on the bottom came off easily enough, and his shoulders seemed to float as Naomi lifted the weight off from behind. He fell forward, his upper body surging with relief, and for a moment he felt like he was flying. He could hear the backpack thud to the cement floor behind him, and he stumbled forward against the tube wall, staring in disbelief at the gurgling mass of fungus covering the walls and floor of the hallway. He could hear the snap of the leather and the rustle of canvas as Naomi opened the pack in the way Roberto had demonstrated. "Son of a bitch," she said. Teacake pushed himself against the wall and turned around. Naomi was on her knees, bent over the backpack. Its top was opened, a tangle of belts, ropes, and buckles dripping off its sides. There were enough warning stickers plastered to the inside of the lid to scare off all but the most dedicated kamikaze soldier. Nestled on the padded bottom of the pack was an impossibly antiquated-looking pair of metal tubes lying side by side. There was a small square box beside each of them, a neutron generator, and a red-fitted cap at one end of each, the bullet that would fire into the tube's fissile core. There was a snarl of wires that led from the explosive caps to a thing that looked suspiciously like an on-off switch, set in its downward position. It seemed like it could be maneuvered manually if necessary, but it was also connected by a web of wires to a small, square, digital timer. The timer was the problem. It was set at 4 minutes and 47 seconds, and it was already counting down. Naomi looked up at Teacake. The son of a bitch started it.